I wonder this morning as we start, how important to you is your holiness? So holiness for God's people is how differently we live to the world around us. So the word holy comes from the word sanctified, set apart. It's how different, how transformed we are in our thinking. How important to you is holiness? Be really honest. If you were ranking it out of 10, 10 is the most important, 0 is not important at all. Where would your personal holiness come? Okay. What about for us as a church? How important is it as a church that we are holy? Is it vitally important? Is it of some importance, or is it of almost no importance? And here's the second thing to do. Who does our holiness matter to? Does it just matter to me? Okay. Does it just matter to God? And really, that's why sometimes we're not that bothered. Does it matter to our family? Does it matter to our church family? Or does it matter to our community in the world? I wonder how you'd answer those questions. I wonder how you've answered them as you've lived this week. Because it's one thing to sit here on a Sunday morning, isn't it, and answer those questions. Because my hunch is we'd all go, it's an 8 or 9 or a 10. Okay? But actually, how do we answer them in the office on a Wednesday? Or when the kids are up again for the 7th time because they just won't go to bed at 8:30 on a Thursday. How much does our holiness matter? Do you know, the world sees what God is like through his people. Just let that sink in for a minute. When people watch us and we claim the name of Jesus, we say we are Christians, they are looking at us and thinking, oh, now I can see what Jesus is like. Now I can see what God is like. So the only way they will come to know what God is like is the way we live. The world will know the wonder of God's love, the joy of knowing him, the amazing nature of grace through you and I, and the way we relate together as a church. Not us as individuals, okay? But how we relate together as a church. It is God's people and their life together that declares what Father, Son, and Spirit are like to the world. Now just bear all that in mind as we come to Amos. Because in Amos, in the 8 chapters so far, we've seen Israel who label themselves the people of God. Okay? They're saying we are God's people. Look at us. And you see what God is like. They've been redeemed, they've been rescued to be God's holy people. And yet they claim to be God's people, but they compromise, they embrace idolatry, they love sin, and they treat God as an also-ran. Are you God's people if you're not God's people? You can claim the name, can't you? But not live out the reality. Israel don't see holiness as important. They don't see holiness as necessary. They don't see being different as worth fighting for. They'll take the name of God's people because they want the positives, but they've forgotten that actually people were supposed to look at them and see what God is like. So if you were the nations watching on, what would you conclude about Yahweh, about Israel's God? You would conclude he's not glorious. He's not worthy of worship. He's just another deity, just another means to get what you want. And to be honest, not a very effective one because Israel aren't that powerful. So as the world looks at Israel, God's people, God is reduced to an also-ran in the parade of gods. Now the book of Amos is about God calling his people to live up to the name they bear. Because their living directly influences how the world thinks of God. As they shrink God down and minimize worship and compromise on faithfulness and abandon justice and righteousness and holiness, the world thinks God's not worth worshiping. That's why the book of Amos is here. It is God saying to his people, remember the image at the start, the lion roaring to his people, saying, be my people. If you name the name, if that's who you claim you are, live it out. If not, the rest of the book is about what a holy God does with an unholy people who tarnish his name. That's what the book of Amos is about. So two things we see in this chapter this morning. Here's the first. God sifts his people. Did you ever have a whole class detention? Okay? Did you ever have one? I had one. It was my one black mark. Not because I wasn't naughty. I just never got caught. Okay? But I had one whole class detention. And you know, I remember just feeling the injustice of it. How dare you as a teacher punish me for something I didn't do? How dare you punish 35 people for something one person did and you just didn't see them? Okay? That's what a whole class teacher, a whole class detention does, isn't it? The teacher can't identify who it was, so they punish everyone. And it's just not fair. Please tell me you share the injustice. Do you know what I mean? It's just, if you're a teacher, you were wrong. Okay? It's just not right. Okay? Now, I think part of our problem is when we come to a chapter like Amos 9, we think God is the teacher giving everybody detention. We think God is being unfair. God should really punish the bad people. Okay? Have you ever done a morality ladder? Okay, I remember sitting in a pub with a friend of mine who was saying, well, Al, I don't get. How could God judge anyone? And I said, well, here's the problem, your morality ladder. If you've got a ladder, okay, and the cut-off point, we'll put on in a minute, but at the top is God's standard of goodness and at the bottom is absolute evil. Okay, where would you put someone like Hitler? Well, you'd put him down the bottom, wouldn't you? If you don't see me afterwards, you need to have a big conversation, okay? Where would you put someone like Mother Teresa? You'd put her near the top, wouldn't you? Because she's really good. Let me mention a divisive character, Margaret Thatcher. Where would she go on your list? Or, you could put people wherever you want. Think about your mum and dad. Where would your mum and dad go on the ladder of morality? Okay, that will reveal some interesting therapy needs, won't it? What about your kids? That would depend on how well they've done this morning, wouldn't it? There are some days as parents, they're right at the bottom, okay? And when they're asleep, they're near the top, okay? That's the way we're... Here's the question. Where do you put you? Be really honest. Here's the really big question. Where's the cut-off line for those God should welcome into heaven? Here's what we always do. It's always just below us, okay? And then you come to a passage like this and you think, how can God judge a whole people? He's like the teacher putting everyone in detention, but he's not. Okay, don't miss what's going on in these verses. Verses 1 to 10, God is not the teacher putting everybody in detention as he sends them into exile. But God is drawing a distinction between those who claim to be his people but aren't and those who really live out being his people. Now this chapter's got a couple of really important things to say. It says God sifts. The first is you don't want to be opposed to God. Look at verse 1. God stands by the altar and they're expecting God to say lovely things because that's where they come to worship God. But what does God say? I'm going to knock the altar down. I'm going to knock the temple down on your heads. And then you get this list of things of places people will try and escape God and no one will get away. So you go down to the depths, no one will get there away. Go up to the heavens, God will bring them down. Go hide on top of a mountain, God will find them. Hide at the bottom of the sea, God will bring them up. Even if you go as far away from God as you can get, verse 4, there God will pursue you. You cannot escape God. By God's very nature, if he made everything, there's nowhere he can't go, is there? Okay, playing hide and seek with God is ridiculous. No one will escape. Wherever they go, God will find them. And he says, verse 4, that he keeps his eye on them for harm and not for good. That's not being mean. That's God saying he's keeping his eye on them because they're going to get what they deserve. Okay, because they've rejected him. No matter what the false priests and the prophets say, they're going to get what their actions deserve. Because look at verses 5 and 6. God is almighty. God touches the earth and it melts. He's built his lofty palace in the heaven. He sets the earth's foundations on their place. He calls for the waters of the sea and pours them out. God is a God who is so all-powerful, he can do anything. So don't think you can hide from him. And don't think it's unimportant to be opposed by God. And when God looks at Israel, what does he see? Look at verse 7 and 8. He looks at the Israelites and he says, you're the same to me as the Cushites. You live just like every other people group around you. And yet God brought them up from Egypt. He redeemed them, but they're not living as his redeemed people. They are no different from any other nation. That's what those two questions are saying to them. Don't think you're special. Because look what he sees. When God looks at Israel, what does he see? Verse 8, surely the eyes of the sovereign Lord are on, what's Israel like? The sinful kingdom. God looks at his people who name his name, who say they're a holy God's people, and just sees sinfulness. And so God says he'll destroy them. But notice this is not the whole class detention. Yet I will not totally destroy the descendants of Jacob. And he gives this picture in verse 9. He's going to shake them like a sieve, and he's going to separate out the good and the bad. He's going to separate out the wheat, the grain, from the pebbles. Okay? The wheat will get planted in the ground and flourish, but the pebbles that you don't want, he'll get rid of. He'll destroy. God is going to separate out who among those who claim to be his people are really his people because they're living like it, and those who just claim to be his people but live however they want. Now, what God is saying to the people of Israel is, when the Assyrians come, when they surround Jerusalem, when they pull down the walls of the city, when they take you away to captivity, when some of you die, this is a warning. It's coming because you're not living as my people. You're claiming to be one thing, but you're not being it. And God is going to purify his people so that they look like his people. Now, that doesn't mean those that he have been faithful to him won't suffer. They've still got to go through the siege. They've still got to go through the exile. They